Good evening, everybody. Let's cultivate our motivation. And with a sense of joy and wonder at the number of causes we needed to create in the past in order to have so many different conditions come together to be able to listen to the Dharma right now at this very moment. The sense of awe at how that all happened. Then let's make a determination to use the opportunity carefully and attentively and with wisdom, not taking it for granted. And in particular, let's place our listening and reflecting and meditating within the context of benefiting sentient beings. And by aiming for full enlightenment as the best way to be of the greatest benefit to them. If we take the time to really think about all the causes and conditions that had to come together so that we have this opportunity right now, here, today, it's really rather amazing, isn't it? Yeah? Because, you know, how did we even get the... How were we even born as who we were to start with when we could have been born as so many different sentient beings? Why did we have the life experience that we had? And what were the seeds inside of us that got nourished by this life experience that led us to have some interest in the Dharma? And then having that interest in the Dharma, why did we pursue it? So many people don't. Yeah. And then how did we all find our way to the Abbey? Or find our way to the computer? It's, you know, for our internet audience. How did this all happen? When you think about it, so many incredible causes and conditions had to come together for this one very moment to come into being in the way it did. Yeah? And when you look at our life with the opportunity that we have over a period of time, and then you think of all these causes and conditions that had to come together. It's really rather mind-boggling, you know, because there's so many other things we could be doing, so many other people we could be. Yeah. Why were we born in the family we were born in? Why did we have the education we had? All these different things, you know. It all depends on causes, on conditions. Nothing happens in and of itself. Nothing was predetermined by somebody else. It's just this whole web of things happening. And then we have the fortune to be here tonight. Yeah? And people have been on retreat, so you probably don't know, but the situation in the Middle East has flared up, and it's really quite awful. I mean, really awful, really, really, really awful. And, you know, how is it that we're here and we're not there? You know? And what is our responsibility to sentient beings having the opportunity that we have to be able to benefit those who aren't here? And to maintain a mind of equanimity in that conflict. It's really awful, and it's very tempting to take sides, one side or the other side. And then you see that the whole thing is deluded sentient beings. You know, that's all it is, both sides. anybody on either side of this horrible conflict with just a change of karma could have been born on in the other side of the border, had a different life, and be involved in the same conflict, but playing a different part with a different philosophy. But the philosophies actually coincide to a great extent, which is you started it. That's what both sides are saying. It's like, do you remember when you did that with your siblings? Do you remember? Whenever my parents came in when we were fighting, he started it! He started it! Therefore, I have a right to hit him back or take his toy or throw sand in his face. And then, of course, you know, in my case, it was my brother because my sister was quite a bit younger than me. You know, no, she started it! And she's the oldest. She should know better. That's what you always tell her. And so here you have these two sides that, you know, are acting basically like we did when we were kids. Yeah, you started it, so that gives me the right to harm you. Yeah. And then also, you know how you were with some of your siblings? How you kind of did things that you knew were going to bug them to get a reaction? Any of you do that? You know? Well, that's exactly what's going on. You know, it's like, let's just do that. Get a reaction, and then everybody will blame him. You know? So no matter which side you're on in this horrible thing, it's suffering, and it's samsaric suffering. And you see, the whole thing is brought about by causes and conditions, not only the ones in this life, but the ones in previous lives. Yeah? And how, but just for a small thing of karma, you know, we could all be having very different experiences in different places in the globe right now. Yeah, so not to take this for granted, but to really kind of work for the benefit of all these beings. And really see it as the deluded human mind. Instead of taking sides and this one and that one and blah, 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 it's, you know, this is the outcome of afflictions. This is the outcome of karma. And this is why it's important to practice the Dharma and try and be free. Because if we don't try and be free, we could wind up as a Hamas leader or as an Israeli government official in the next life. And then we could be the ones provoking and continuing this kind of thing. Yeah. And so we don't want to do that. And in addition, we want to be able to do something to benefit. Okay. So it really touches the mind that likes to take sides. Yeah? Really does. And it's like, no, it's not about taking sides. It's about what are the deeper causes for what's going on. Yeah? What are the deeper causes? Yeah? Because we can all see that, you know, you might have many ceasefires, but without addressing the real issue, it doesn't get fixed. So that's even the issue, you know, in this life. But even if you address that, it's still not going to get fixed as long as there's anger and attachment. You know? And where do the anger and attachment come from? They come from ignorance. And where does the ignorance come from? Previous life ignorance. Okay, so we're going to continue talking about karma. And just from the reaction I've gotten from people here and the emails that have come, it seems to be a topic that people are reacting to a lot, you know, and that's really making you think. Did you do your homework last week? Mm-hmm. Yeah? And so what did you learn about reflecting on the heaviness of the karma and the different factors involved. Yeah?
I took a situation when I was a kid, mm-hmm. killing insects, mm-hmm. and saw that all of the strength of intention, method, lack of antidote, so very heavy karma as a kid. And then I kind of contrasted that with, as an adult, and looking at judgment mind or being critical,
mm-hmm.
and really the one that's high, the weight, the heaviest weight on that one is really just the method, that it's a repeatedly, the habitual.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't really find much intention. I'm sure there is, but mm-hmm. it's very weak. I can't mm-hmm. get at it very easily, so much harder.
Okay. So you started out taking kind of a very obvious negativity as a kid of killing insects and seeing that there were many of the weighty factors involved in it. Strong intention, I'm going to get that bug, and doing it many times, and maybe doing it cruelly, and no antidotes and things like that. So making that heavy. And then thinking as an adult about having a very critical, judgmental mind, which is the kind of mind that leads. It's a mind that's very close to maliciousness. Yeah, because if we don't watch that judgmental mind, it just goes over into maliciousness. And seeing that of the weighty factors, you found that the one of habit and repeatedness was strong, but you didn't find a strong intention. You're trying to apply the antidotes. Yeah. But there's definitely an intention there, isn't there? Because if there weren't the intention, the mind wouldn't be doing this so often. Yeah. So it's interesting to ask ourselves, what am I getting out of this? Yeah. Because often, ego mind is getting something out of the criticizing of other people. Yeah? Because and it can work in a few different ways. Sometimes this critical mind, judgmental mind, could be, well, if they're so bad, I must be good. Okay, so it could be a way to make us feel good about ourselves in a very contorted way. Or another thing is, just by having this kind of in the mind all the time, there's a definite feeling of I am. Yeah? And so ego gets a hit. You know, self-grasping ignorance gets a hit. Because there's this negative emotion in the mind. Mm-hmm. So look at all these different things and kind of see, you know, what is it that I'm getting out of it? And it's obviously in some kind of contorted way, you know. So ignorance is getting something out of it, or attachment, or arrogance, or something's getting something out of it. Yeah? And what did other people see? Yeah?
I didn't like the homework.
Uh-huh. So then it was a good homework assignment, because she said she didn't like it because it made her look at something that was disturbing. Go on.
So years ago, I was in this relationship, and the sister of my boyfriend really didn't like me. And so then I reviewed what I did in response to her dislike of me. Mm-hmm. And I did it all. I repeatedly talked to my friend who agreed with me about how bad she was. And I felt victorious that I was the good person and she was the bad person. And then I kept thinking in my deluded way that, you know, please may there be a miracle so that there can be at least a truth to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kept, you know, firing that attitude that she gives me back at her. Mm-hmm. I was just lost in the struggle. And I think what really got to me is one day I had been reading about putting my thing on myself. And I thought, in this lifetime, I know where there's a hit. This is before I had encountered any of my teachings. And another friend said to me at one point, well, you know, was doing the homework, I thought there was no chance for truth at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, lost in the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I see that I had created all the causes for her to be suffering. And that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I had rejoiced in what I was doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me tell the others here. So many years ago you were involved in a relationship, and your partner's, your boyfriend's sister didn't like you. And of course it was all her fault. And you were enduring all of this. But what you're realizing now is that you also played a role in it, and that you did things that made her dislike you. And what really kind of brought you to your awareness at one point was when you were reading a book by Elie Wiesel, and it dawned on you that, oh, I know what it's like to hate. And that's shocking, isn't it? To see that we have the ability to hate so much in our own mind. And then thinking that at the time there was nothing, you were so locked in it you couldn't do anything. But now, having some perspective, seeing that you played a big role in making the whole thing happen, and did so with a lot of enthusiasm and rejoicing, and so it was something done repeatedly,
mm-hmm.
yeah, with some intention that was fairly strong, yeah. And causing her pain, and it taking a while for you to understand her pain.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be busy with Vajrasattva.
Well, I actually worked on that for 3 months.
Good.
Uh huh.
Yeah, and that happens quite a bit. We might work on something very seriously in our practice for a period of time, and it seems to get resolved, and then years later it comes up again, and we have the opportunity to work on it again, chipping away at a deeper level of it than we had before. Yeah. Good. Anybody else?
What came up for me doing this was the question, what's the completion stage when I have repeatedly done something that would not bring about the desired result, which is for instance, desiring to be spoken to more respectfully, I have snarled at people. it never worked.
No, but we keep doing it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you want other people to speak to you more respectfully.
More pleasantly, more politely.
You know, and appreciatively of you. And so the method you use to get them to do that is to snarl at them.
So if they said something, you know, in a tone that I didn't like, then I would give them, you know, a verbal slap.
Uh-huh. And, yeah, right. It's the same thing. This is our national policy. I'm going to beat you up until you decide you like me. Really, it's the national policy. It's our personal policy. You know, you do something I don't like, I'm going to make you miserable until you decide that you like me and I'm right.
And you treat me better.
Yeah, and you treat me better.
It's so stupid.
It's definitely stupid. Definitely stupid. So this is another one, like what Diane was saying. It's like, what is it in us that's getting something out of this? You know? Or what is it that is thinking that this is going to bring about the result we want when it brings about the opposite result? And instead what it does is it puts the imprints, the latency seeds of karma in our mind to experience and hear more harsh speech again in the future. Yeah.
Like digging myself into a pit.
Yes, like digging yourself into a pit. And I mean, this is the situation of sentient beings. You know, when they say that we want happiness, but the ignorance makes it as if we are deliberately creating the causes for suffering. We can see this so clearly in our own lives. It's not just in the Middle East, it's also in our own lives. We want happiness. Everybody wants happiness and doesn't want pain. But the method we use in our confusion to get the happiness we want, it's like we want to suffer and we're deliberately creating the causes for suffering because our techniques to get the happiness don't work. And yet we keep doing them. Because we don't know any better, and because we have these bad habits. Yeah. And so it really takes a lot to just kind of stop and go, you know, this is not working for me, and it's not working for other people.
But even getting to that point of seeing that, like, this totally doesn't work, but stopping the pattern?
Yeah. Yeah. Stop changing the habit is difficult. It's like instead of picking up the phone and saying hello, picking up the phone and saying good morning. Do you think you'll remember to do that? Or, you know, whatever we do habitually, you know. Yeah. And so this is where we have to really be very alert and very attentive. Yeah. And what I find helpful in these situations is in the morning to look ahead during the day and think of the kind of situations I may encounter with different people that may trigger my old habits and remind myself, oh, children, be careful, you know, because if this happens, you're very likely to go into your old habit and you don't want to do that. Yeah, so I find that very helpful in the morning. You know, if I have certain people or certain things that I know are going to happen. It's the same like when we have our community meetings. Do you find yourself sometimes setting your motivation? And it's like, okay, I'm really going to listen this meeting. I'm very much going to listen, or I'm going to, you know, speak kindly. And you set a strong intention right before you're going in a situation. But the thing is that life often brings us situations that we didn't have in our calendar. Yeah, all sorts of surprises. And so this is where the force of setting up new habits is so important.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to add is that once you make efforts to habituate to doing something differently, especially when you live in a community that's well aware of the habit that they've already been experiencing, mm-hmm. is that when you try to change to a kinder, more respectful, at first you're not going to get much of a response because they're expecting the response that they normally, you know, they're almost
yeah.
like they've already got you turned off, pulled away. They've already done their habituation yeah. response.
Right.
You've got to be really patient with yourself, and you've got to be really patient with the people that are just mm-hmm. used to you being other than.
Yeah.
You might not get the, wow, you're nothing.
Yeah. Okay. So how when we start to change in the environment, the people who are used to us being one way aren't going to suddenly kind of, you know, really believe it's happening and give us all sorts of good feedback because they've already got their defenses, you know, all set up and, you know, they're ready to hear things in a certain way. Yep. So we be patient with them and we be patient with ourselves. Okay, so we had a question. So if a non-virtuous action was done with weighty factors, then does the purification also have to be weighty as well? I would think so. Yeah, because, you know, it's like if you put something heavy on one side of the scale, if you want to balance it out, you have to put something heavy on the other side of the scale. And so especially if the factors were weighty in terms of a strong intention or in terms of doing it many times, then, you know, the force of the determination not to do it again has to be very, very strong in order to stop the result of that karma, which is one of the results is the tendency to do it again. Okay, so if you have a lot of energy behind doing something repeatedly or with a strong motivation, then you really have to work at it for a bit of time to counterbalance that and pull yourself out of it. Okay, so this week we're going to talk more about the results of karma. Yeah, so they talk about it sometimes as three results or as four results. So it just depends on how you do it. If it's three results, they call it the ripening result. Okay, the result that is concordant with the cause and the environmental result. Yeah, that's if you say three. If you say four, you take the middle one, the causally concordant result, or the concordant result, and you divide that one into two. So the causally concordant result, you know, which means the tendency to create that cause and the habit, you know, a habit to do it again, and the experiential concordant result, which is you're going to experience something similar to what you made other people. Okay, so whether you divide it into three or four, it has the same meaning. So when we go through these, the ripening result and the causally concordant result for each one is something that I don't think I need to repeat. It's kind of obvious. In terms of the ripening result, which means the life you're going to get born into, so if you do any of the 10 with all the factors complete, it's going to lead to a lower rebirth in terms of the 10 non-virtues. In terms of the 10 virtues, it'll lead to an upper rebirth. So, you know, I won't repeat it every time that, you know, one of the results of doing this is going to be a lower rebirth. We should have that in our mind. And in fact, you know, that's the one that makes us really think about taking refuge in precepts, because that one can be quite, you know, whoa, I'm going to get born in a lower realm. You know, it can be kind of startling and wake us up a bit, okay? And then the other one that's very similar in each case is the causally concordant, which is the habit to do the same thing again. So if you kill, part of the result you're going to get is the tendency to kill again. Okay? Or if you gossip, you know, part of the result is the tendency to gossip again. And they say that actually this one is the habit, the causally concordant result, is the worst of all the results. You know, you might think, oh, wait a minute, no, the ripening aspect result is worse because that's getting born in a lower realm. That's the worst result. Actually not, because getting born in a lower realm happens for a certain period of time and finished. But the tendency to do the same action again and again and again, that one's really poisonous, because that sets forth the, you know, each time you do it, you create more karma and put more imprint, more habit in your mind to get all four of the results again. Okay, so that's why this habitual one is said to be so serious as a result. And that's why when we're doing the four opponent powers, the power of the determination not to do it again, that's why that one's so important, because that one's going to offset this tendency to do it again. And that's why taking precepts and keeping precepts is so important, because that, you know, also is indirect, you know, right in the face of this tendency to do it again. Okay? But if we look at the experiential result, you know, those are different according to each of the 10, and so is the environmental result. But if you look at them closely, you can always see how they're linked to that original action, okay? So, for example, yeah, killing, if we go through the four results for killing, okay? So the ripening result is a lower rebirth, okay? Then the causally concordant, you know, habitual result is the tendency to do it again, yeah? And then the concordant experiential result is that you're going to experience a short life, okay? Because if we kill, then we're making others have a short life. So then what happens to us after, and this they say this happens after the lower rebirth, when you're again born human, that's when you have the short life. Yeah? So apparently it seems like the ripening result is experienced first. Probably not in all cases, but in many of them. And then after that, you have this concordant experiential result, which is to have a short life. The environmental result is to live in a place with strife and war, okay, where the food and drink and medicine aren't potent. So you live in a place with a lot of fighting that's not peaceful. So, you know, there's a definite tag in or a link with that, between that and killing. And then the things to keep you alive, food and drink and medicine, they don't have any power to keep you alive. You know, some places you go, it's like the medicine has no strength, the food has no energy. So that's an environmental result of killing. Okay. Then for stealing, yeah, the same thing. The experience, the ripening result is a lower rebirth. And then the habitual result is the tendency to steal again. And the result that's concordant with the experience is experiencing poverty, okay? And so having a lack of material possessions. Yeah. So you need something, you don't have it. Yeah. And so you can see the experience that how the link between that, we deprived others of what they need, so now we're being deprived. And then the environmental result is you live in a place with many dangers where there's a lot of poverty and droughts and floods, okay? So you're living in a place where it's very difficult to preserve your material property. Yeah, either by natural causes, or there's a lot of thieves around, or, you know, who knows what's going on. But it becomes, you're living in a place where it's hard to keep, have your possessions be safe. Okay, then unwise and unkind sexual behavior. Again, the rebirth, and then the tendency to do it again. You can see that even in this life, can't you? Yeah. You just set up a habit and, you know, it becomes very difficult. But then the result, according to the experiential result, is in the future lives you wind up with a disagreeable spouse and marital disharmony. Yeah? And it makes sense, doesn't it? Because sexual misconduct is usually interrupting a relationship with, you know, that somebody else has or that you have and or they have with you, and you know, or kind of, you know, treating people poorly, and so that they have a lot, you know, you're using them and, you know, without any respect. So then it makes sense. Then, you know, future life, you have a romantic relationship, your spouse is disagreeable, there's a lot of marital discord, you know, you're constant problems in relationships. Okay? And then the environmental result is living in a dirty place with poor sanitation and a lot of misery. Yeah? And there's lots of places like that, aren't there? Okay. Then for lying, yeah, the ripening one is the lower rebirth, the habitual one is lying again. The experiential one, the one that's concordant, where the experience is concordant with the cause, is that you will be slandered and deceived by others. Yeah. And so sometimes we wonder, you know, why do people slander me and talk bad about me, say lies about me behind my back? Yeah, well, because of my lying. And then also, have you ever had situations where people don't believe you, and you, even when you're telling the truth? Yeah? You're telling the truth and people just do not believe you. And that's a karmic result of our having lied in the past. Yeah? It's kind of like the, what was it, the little boy who called wolf? Yeah, little boy who cried wolf. Yeah, so then when he was telling the truth, nobody believed him. So that's the, yeah, the experience that's concordant with the cause. You lie, and then when you tell them the truth, nobody believes you. And then the environmental result is living in a place with a foul odor where people are deceitful and there's a lot of fear. Okay, so you live in a country where, or in a place in a particular country where people deceive each other a lot, where in order to get anything done, you have to bribe somebody, you have to give bakshish. Yeah? Bakshish, is that it? That's an Indian word?
Yeah.
Do people know it here? You have, huh? What? It's Turkish.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But you have to bribe. You have to give a bribe. Okay. Give them something, you know. Give a handout. And so that comes from lying. So then here you are, you're living in a place where you have, where people are deceitful. And to get anything done, you know, you have to go cut through all this deceit in some way. Okay, so it makes it quite difficult. And a place where there's a lot of fear. Now, what's the link between living in a place where people have a lot of fear and lying? No? Yeah, you can't trust. There's no trust there. Okay? So when we lie, we create the situation, you know, not only for others not to believe us when we're telling the truth, but to be afraid of us because they don't trust us. Yeah. So then we're born in an environment where there's a lot of fear in the environment. Okay. So lying actually is a really big one. You know, sometimes we tend to poo-poo it like, oh, lying isn't so bad, but it really is. It really is. Because we can spend a lot of time building up trust in a relationship, and all it takes is one lie, you know, and then it's very difficult to restore the trust after that. Yeah, so it's a big one. Yeah, and I especially think how lying ties into so many other things. Like, what did we do that we have to lie about? Yeah? And then how lying affects so many other people. And how our ego gets involved. We have to protect our ego, and so we lie to cover something up. And just how divisive it is. Especially in Dharma relationships, if we lie to our spiritual mentors or we lie to our Dharma friends, we're totally destroying the relationship. Because those are the people who are the ones who really want to help us the most. And when we lie to them, we're preventing them from helping us. And we're creating an attitude of mistrust between us. Yeah? And so it's so important to kind of get over that thing inside of ourselves that doesn't want to tell the truth and kind of fess up. Because the thing is, when we tell the truth, we feel better. I don't know about you, but I feel better. You know, because I find it very difficult to do big lies. One time, because I was always afraid, because I would get in trouble if I ever lied, and I would get in trouble really big time. So it was often out of a lot of fear that I didn't lie. But I remember one time the neighbors who lived next door, they had moved out of their house and moved across the street. And so a few of us kids, we found one of the windows open. And of course, the house had nothing in it. But we went in the window and walked around the house. So in my mind, it was like, I'm not supposed to be doing this. You know, I will get in so much trouble if my parents knew that I did this. Even though there's nothing in the house, you know. It's like, you're not supposed to do that. But I did it with some of my friends. And then I felt so guilty and I felt so awful. And it was like, I just couldn't stand the feeling inside, you know. So I had to go and tell my parents that I did it. Yeah, because I just couldn't stand like how it felt inside doing that. Anyway. So I thought that was actually good that I couldn't stand that, you know, that feeling. You know, that was good for a kid. Because then if you can't stand the feeling of having done, I mean, first I couldn't stand the fact that I did something that I wasn't supposed to do. And then, two things, I couldn't stand the fact that I was keeping it hidden, you know. So both of those things. So it was actually kind of good that I had that. Because when you don't have that sense of, you know, betraying others or some sense of conscience, then you just kind of do whatever, don't you? And never think about it. Yeah?
What about the kind of, well, I don't have to fess up to the real people. I'll just purify it in my meditation practice.
Oh, okay. So that one. So I don't have to really tell anybody I did this. I'll purify it in my meditation practice. That one, you have to see. Because there are some situations where for the, you know, years later, it isn't really skillful to go and tell somebody that you did this thing in the past because it might cause them more upset now. Yeah. And so there, out of maybe some concern for the other person, you work on purifying it in your own practice. Yeah, but you don't have to go blabber it all to the whole world. Yeah, but then there's other situations where maybe you're using that as an excuse to not really be honest about what you did. And in those situations when you're using it as an excuse to not be honest, then sometimes we have to nudge ourselves and then think of who is an appropriate person to tell. Yeah. Because there's some people who are appropriate to tell and some people where it's not appropriate. Yeah? And so think of, yeah. So what is it? But we all have those things, don't we? I'm not picking on you. We all have them. We all have them. Okay. Then, using our speech to create disharmony, lower rebirth, tendency to do it again. Okay. The experience, the result, similar to the cause in terms of our experience, is not having friends. Yeah. Makes sense, doesn't it? If we use speech to create disharmony, we're not going to have friends. And the thing is, this is the karmic result in future lives, but it's also what happens this life, isn't it?
Just with a critical sense in mind.
Yeah. And, you know, talking behind people's back, creating factions, dividing people. Yeah, all of that stuff. Which we do so easily, don't we? We can really do that very easily. Okay? And then you meet people who have a really hard time having friends. You know, they seem like nice enough people, but nobody wants to be with them. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah? This, the kind of karmic result. Yeah. And then the environmental result is you live in a place that is bumpy and uneven, where travel is difficult. Okay? So, you know, disharmonious speech makes things bumpy and uneven, and it makes relationships difficult. So this is the environmental result. Bumpy, uneven, difficult to travel. I wonder what we did to have a road filled with ice, you know? Maybe were we, you know, collective as a group, chilly to other people? You know, somebody came to us for help and we responded very coldly and chilly, and now we live in a place with where the county can't even get to plow the road and it's full of ice. I don't know. It's an interesting thing to think about, isn't it? Yeah? Okay, then, harsh words. Yeah. Yeah, the lower rebirth, the habit to do it again. And then the experiential one is we get insulted and abused and put down and criticized. In other words, what we dished out boomerangs and comes back to us. Yeah. And I always find this one very helpful to think about, you know, when I'm about to do harsh words and also when I'm hearing harsh words. You know, because as I've often told you, when I compare the number of harsh words that I hear, you know, directed towards me compared to the number of harsh words that I've said to other people, I've said much more than I've heard. So I'm actually getting off quite kind of easily when people criticize me or speak harshly to me or whatever. And so just, you know, accept that with equanimity and not respond in kind and keep the whole thing going. Mm-hmm.
So venerable to hear people always sounding like they're criticizing and using harsh speech when in fact they're not, is also the karma.
I would say so, yeah. I would say so, that when you have the tendency that even when people aren't criticizing, you hear it as criticism, I would say that's definitely linked in with, yeah, criticizing other people. Yeah. Because then other people kind of react that way to us, don't they? Yeah, we criticize, so every time they see us, that's what you were saying before, they have their defenses up already. Yeah. So, very similar. We have our defenses up, even though somebody hasn't said anything to us yet. Okay, then idle talk. Yeah, lower rebirth. What? Oh, environmental result of harsh words. Barren, dry place that is inhabited by uncooperative people. Okay? Makes sense, doesn't it, with harsh words? Barren, dry, uncooperative people. A place with thorns, sharp stones, and dangerous animals. So, you're sharp-tongued. You live in a place with sharp stones and a lot of thorns and, yeah, and many dangerous animals. And we live in such a beautiful, peaceful place, don't we? Kind of amazing up here. Okay, then idle talk. So lower rebirth, tendency to do idle talk again. And then the result, similar to the cause in terms of our experience, is that people don't value or listen to our words. Okay? So it makes sense. When you do a lot of idle talk, people at some point tune you out because you're just going blah, blah, blah. So then in a future life, when you actually do have something good to say or some good advice or some instructions or something, you know, that's worthy of listening to, people tune you out, you know, they don't listen, your speech doesn't have any weight. They say, oh yeah, yeah, and then go on and do whatever. Sound familiar? Okay. And then the result, the environmental result of that, is you live in a drab place with unbalanced climate where the fruit doesn't ripen at the proper time. drab, unbalanced climate, fruit doesn't ripen, you know, because idle talk, what does it do? It dries everything up, doesn't it? Okay, then moving on into the three mental non-virtues. Yes, the first one is coveting, so lower rebirth, tendency to covet again. And similar to the experience, actually this comes in, it's very similar to the habit, is in having intense desires and lots of craving. Yeah, so again, it makes sense, you know. You cultivate craving and desire in this life, then future life, you know, there you are, maybe trying to practice the Dharma, and your mind is, you know, I want this, and I want that, and I need this, and I need that. Constant craving and desire, you know, in a way that's harmful for our practice. And then the environmental result is small crops, and the environment constantly deteriorates. So covetousness is related to greed. So it makes sense that it would, you know, the crops don't bear results. Yeah? Because when they're greedy, you know, we're taking. So then you're born in an environment, the crops don't bear the results. The environment, again, is kind of dry. It's deteriorating all the time. Okay. That's interesting to think about in terms of global warming, isn't it? Yeah? And that you can see it. I mean, even this life, how that results, you know. I mean, why is the global warming coming? It's coming because of greed. And we can't just blame the corporations because we're the ones who drive the cars. You know, we're the ones who pollute the air. We're the ones who drive when we don't need to be driving and do all sorts of other things. So it's our greed as well.
They yeah. Quite fast, like in places where they irrigate it to grow cotton, mm-hmm. and the soil gets built up too many minerals and it gets depleted so quickly. So every year there's less and less and less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So a land that was built up to be able to grow cotton, but then with the result of pollution.
Irrigation.
Oh, pollutes the land and
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So then malice, okay? Malicious thought. Then yeah, same result. Then like the experience is to have a lot of hatred. Yeah, so you're born as a person with a lot of hatred. And I think also, this isn't in the text, but I think also people who suffer from paranoia and suspicion, I think that's a result of having a lot of malicious thoughts in previous lives. Yeah? So if you're suspicious, you're fearful, you think people are always trying to do harm to you, yeah? I think that kind of lack of trust of other people and, you know, paranoia and suspicion, fear, that comes from maliciousness. Yeah, because when we have maliciousness, that's how we are making other people feel about us. Yeah. One of the guys I write to, one of the inmates, he was telling me that, you know, for so long he's like, tried to make other people afraid of him and, you know, project this kind of macho thing and don't mess with me because I'm going to beat you up, buddy, if you do. And, you know, how deliberately creating that with a lot of, I mean, you can see why do people deliberately create that image? Because there's a lot of fear, isn't there? But then, so to counter the fear, you develop your malicious thoughts towards others, you act like that, and you keep that whole thing going in the mind again and again and again. Okay? Then the environmental result is a place with epidemics, disputes, dangerous animals, and poisonous snakes. Yeah, so a place where it's dangerous. Yeah, because we, with our malicious thoughts, you know, invented all sorts of schemes to cause danger and harm to others. And then distorted views. Yeah, being born deeply ignorant. Yeah, so this could be, you know, if you have distorted views, it could be what we normally consider ignorant, like with some kind of learning disability. But I think it can also mean a person who is very intelligent in a worldly way, but very ignorant in a Dharma way. Because you meet people sometimes who in worldly ways are extremely bright, but you try and talk to them about karma or the value of compassion or something like that, and it's like they don't get it. Yeah. So I think this could be a kind of cause from distorted views. And then the environmental result is born in a place with few crops, and you lack a home and you lack a protector. Yeah. Because with all sorts of distorted views, you know, we're displacing ourselves from the path to enlightenment. So lack a home, lack a protector. Because our correct views in some ways are our best protector. Because if we take the time to really generate right views, then from there right action will come. But if at the beginning we have wrong views, then from that, yeah, all sorts of negative actions come. Okay. Oh, I was going to finish this whole talk about karma, but I didn't. So we have time for a couple of questions? Yeah.
I have a question about idle talk.
Mm-hmm.
And when we went through the exercise a couple of weeks ago, you know, the homework before, trying to even identify how much idle talk I've done is like, it's impossible. And so looking at the weightiness of it, you know, sometimes the intention is quite strong, and because it's fun, you were saying, how we pass time, how we relate to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something in that about trying to get how damaging it is. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around mm-hmm. how damaging it is enough to lead to a lower rebirth, because it is so much how we relate to each other is.
Right. Okay. So your question is that because idle talk is so much of how we relate to each other as human beings, it's difficult to understand how this can be so severe as to cause a lower rebirth, because it's so commonly accepted to idle talk. Killing people see as something, you know, to be abandoned. But idle talk, people don't see that as something to be abandoned. They see it as something to cultivate, you know, because the wittier you can be, the juicier gossip you have about somebody else, the, you know, more you know about, you know, politics and sales and things like that, then the more people will think you're interesting. Yeah. So this one about idle talk, I think we have to understand it a lot. It doesn't mean that every time we talk to somebody, we have to either be talking about some practical issue that needs to be communicated about, or we need to have a deep Dharma discussion. Okay? Because, not all human communication is like that. There's situations where you just say, hi, how are you, you know, and you just chat with people. Like the people who come and are building, you know, with our building, you know, we're not going to, sometimes we have practical things to discuss, but we're not going to sit down and say, do you believe in rebirth, you know, it's like, yeah, it's just not appropriate. So, you know, hi, we're having a lot of snow, aren't we? How you doing? If you had to shovel your roof, you know? So we talk like that. But the thing is, if you're aware that you're chatting like that, And you're doing it for the purpose of just developing some kind of friendly communication with other people and making people feel at ease. And you're aware of that you're doing that and why you're doing it. Then it doesn't seem to me that it would be, you know, something to be abandoned, because you are mindful of why you're doing it, who you're doing it with, and you know when to stop. Okay. Of course, that's tricky, because sometimes we're mindful at the beginning of, you know, I'm starting this conversation to just chat and make somebody relax, but then we get so involved in it that 4 hours later, we're still chatting. Okay. So we have to be careful about that one. But in particular, what we want to be careful with is wasting the time of people who practice the Dharma. Yeah, because that's where idle talk becomes really damaging. You know, when we just sit around and shoot the breeze and talk and blah, 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 and say the same thing to each other over and over and over again instead of reaching a decision and going on, you know. Or we just sit and, you know, laugh and laugh and laugh and blah, blah, blah. You know, that's when it becomes really detrimental, because the time that could be used, you know, studying and practicing is now turned into just chattering away. Okay. So that's the detrimental thing. But, you know, there are occasions where you do chat, and certainly, you know, I think laughter is good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So, do we experience all four of these results?
Okay.
So, of unpurified karma?
Okay. So, if we do an action, if it has all four parts to it, and if it's not purified, then yes, we will experience all four results. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we purify, then we start to cut away at the results. And so this can be an excellent way to give ourselves some energy to start to change, is some of these things that we've done repeatedly that we have a very bad habit with, spend some meditation sessions thinking of that result. And, you know, do all four results and think of really, you know, having that lower rebirth and, you know, being constantly belittled and put down and criticized and disrespected again and again. Because there's some people in society, wherever they turn, people are doing that. Yeah. So, okay, that's a result of harsh words. Yeah. So imagine how I feel if I were to have that kind of experience, or to be born in a place, you know, where it's, there's lots of thorns and, you know, and really put yourself in that experience, and then that gives us some kind of energy to stop doing the action. Yeah, because we see, oh, there's a relationship between what I'm doing now and what I'm going to experience later.
What's your advice for when we know about karma? This is the problem that I had a couple months ago. I knew about karma and I received these teachings, but I still want to do the habitual actions and ignore the fact that karma existed, but couldn't ignore the fact that karma existed, but still did the habitual actions.
Okay. So what about those times when you know about karma, okay, and there, and so, but you also have a lot of habit energy going in a direction, and so then you know, oh, I don't want to do this because it's creating cause of suffering, but I really want to do it. But I shouldn't be doing it, but I want to do it. Yeah. That's happening because really in our mind we don't believe in karma. Yeah. Because really at that time, our understanding of future lives is intellectual. And so then we say, I shouldn't do it. And shoulds doesn't work very well when we have a very strong desire or a very strong affliction in our mind. And so that's where I think it's very helpful. You know, the more we meditate on karma, the more we think about future lives and link actions and their results together, then the easier it becomes in those situations to really say, okay, wait a minute. Yeah, I have a lot of habit to do this, but I really don't want that result. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay. But you had your hand up. Okay. Good. So spend some time this week thinking about the four results of different karmas, and do it not only in terms of these 10 non-virtues, but think of the 10 virtues. Yeah, and think of the four results in terms of the 10 virtues. And actually, because I didn't go through these, the ones with the 10 virtues this week, make sure that you do that yourself and really go through and think about the good results that come from keeping the 10 virtues. Yeah, and then second part of the homework assignment is then maybe choose one bad habit and really think about what the results of that come to be. Okay.